Hello and welcome to another edition of Living with Dying. I'm talking today to Louise Dillon of Armadillo Life, which is a company she founded about grief in the workplace and how to help bereaved colleagues get through the day. Louise, this is something I've come across before on my podcast. I remember talking to a lovely lady called Ginny Daly, who had to deliver a stillborn baby at 9 months. And then when she got back to work, she found it very difficult. And colleagues obviously found it very difficult too. So there's a lot to talk about here. But I wondered if we could begin by my asking you how you got into this work in the first place.
Well, I got into this line of work because my son died. And Fred died in May 2020. And I was self-employed anyway, but found coming back to work incredibly difficult in terms of my own grief. Actually, I found other people very difficult and how they responded to me. Some people were great and some people were not so great. But mainly I realized that that was out of fear. Everybody wanted to be kind. Everybody wanted to be supportive, but they just didn't know how. So they either just avoided the subject or just sort of blundered around, not really knowing what to do. My business up until that point had been marketing and company training. So I've always been quite a good talker. So I thought, actually, this is something that I can talk about. This is something that I really know about. And so therefore, if I can do something to open up the conversation and make people just a bit more comfortable with the fact that it's really messy and uncomfortable, then that might be a good way to spend my time.
Messy and uncomfortable, very good description. And it is hard. And I've been doing this podcast now for nearly a couple of years. I've talked to, I think you're probably something like my 63rd person. Yet I still find myself not sure what to say to people some of the time. If I know they've been recently bereaved, I feel like I should do better.
Yeah. And actually, and it, because we all know that it's really important and we all want to get it right, but it's really difficult because you either say something that you're worried is going to be wrong, or you sound like you're a bit slick and professional.
Yes.
So you're just left with this. There is nothing good to say. There is no right answer or perfect sort of script that you can use in that situation. And I think that is absolutely fine.
So taking you back to when you lost your son and had to return to work, what would you have liked people to say?
I think the main thing I like people to say is just that they're sorry and then to move on. I think one of the difficulties, especially in the workplace, is that you're never quite sure whether people know or not. Mm-hmm. So obviously, like if you're working within a team, that's different. But if you've got sort of colleagues or clients or just people that you come into contact with sporadically, you're never quite sure whether they know. And so you're never quite sure whether they are just avoiding the subject or they genuinely have no idea. And then you get this really uncomfortable thing of, is it now too late to tell them? Because they haven't brought it up. Should I bring it up? So actually just a very simple, I'm really sorry to hear your news, or just I'm really sorry, is it just puts everybody at ease in a, we all know what we're talking about. We all know where we are. And I never really needed much more than that, really.
So it would have helped you if you'd known they knew, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because otherwise I think it's just this sort of thing hanging in the air. And that is something, I suppose, that's very personal to everybody. And that's why there's no real way to get it right, because somebody else might not want people to acknowledge it and might not want people to know. And so it's quite a difficult balance to strike. But I think if somebody has been bereaved and you do know that, then a really simple I'm so sorry the first time you see them is enough. And that doesn't have to be accompanied by a sort of changing the voice and a tilt of the head. It's just a statement. And then if somebody wants to talk more about it, they can. But if they want to move the conversation on, then they can. But at least everybody knows where they are.
I know exactly what you mean. There's a difference between what you talked about before, which was the slick and professional, sorry for your loss. And yeah. The other one, which is, oh, I'm so sorry to hear your news.
Yeah, absolutely. And it depends on how you are as a person. And I think everybody needs to sort of have the confidence, is probably the wrong word, but the comfort to be themselves. So, and I talk about this, actually, a friend of mine who I used to work with before, we met about 6 months later, and he sort of very, very nicely said, I'm not going to ask how you are. And I said, that's fine, I don't want to tell you. And then we had a lovely lunch, because that wasn't our relationship. He wasn't someone who was going to, you know, tilt his head and ask emotional questions. Mm. Our relationship wasn't based on that. So there was no real reason for that to change or for him to change in my presence. And I think I found that was the thing that I found difficult, was that people tried to change themselves for me. And I didn't want that. That made me feel very, I suppose that made me feel very isolated and very uncomfortable, that people were frightened to be themselves.
So what do you basically advise when you go into workplaces and talk to colleagues?
I think I advise people, I say, first of all, that, you know, I'm sorry, quickly, and as sort of neutrally as possible. And then really just to be led by the other person and to actually ask. I think particularly when somebody is returning to work from a bereavement leave, rather than second guessing, do they want people to know? Do they not want people to know? Do they actually just ask them, how would you like to handle coming back to work? Would you like an email sent around to everybody explaining what's happened? Are these details you'd rather keep to yourself? Do you want people to, how do you want people to deal with you? I think is a much easier way than the fretting and the distancing yourself, hoping that you get it right. Actually, most people are very good at knowing what they need and just want to be asked what would be good for them, what would feel right for them. So I think that's the most important, to be honest and open about how difficult it is, because it is difficult and there's no way to sort of pick your way through it without feeling uncomfortable at any point.
So do you talk mostly to HR or do you talk to whole companies?
Ideally, I talk to whole companies. And I think one of the reasons I do is that I want teams to be better. And I want people, everyone, to have the confidence that this isn't something that needs to be left to experts. So grief isn't something, obviously, HR need to have great policies and they need to handle things well. But actually, it doesn't matter how great your HR team are if the people you're surrounding yourselves with every day don't know how to talk to you. Lots of HR companies are brilliant and lots of companies have EAPs or employee assistance programs where they'll offer you counseling and give you lots of support. But actually what that can sometimes mean is, please, can you take yourself over there until you're better and then come back to us? Whereas actually getting the team more comfortable and getting the team more able to offer support makes people feel more supported a lot quicker. So ideally, it would be just the people that are surrounding you every day that need that help rather than the people whose job it is.
And then do you kind of prepare those people for odd things that might happen, like somebody might just disappear off to the loo at some point to cry or take an unexpected day off? I mean, is that part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I try to get across to people is that grief, particularly profound grief, lasts a really long time. It isn't just a question of how much bereavement leave do you get and you come back and you're better. The effects of it are long lasting and can be a bit random. So I think, you know, I say grief is very hard on the knees, because I think that people don't understand the physical effects of grief that can manifest itself and can make work difficult. They don't understand the mental effects. People tend to think of grief as sort of being upset or not upset. But actually, you know, the exhaustion that comes with grief is something that people don't always recognize, that actually people are just going to be really tired and are going to need some recovery time or need some extra rest time. People's sort of executive function, sort of mental capacity, can be impaired as well. So I, you know, like I couldn't remember numbers anymore, whereas I used to be able to remember numbers very well. I suddenly just couldn't remember anything and had to have everything written down for me, and had to have everything sort of been, whereas I used to be able to hold lots of thoughts in my head, I needed it written, I needed it in writing, because otherwise I would have instantly forgot it. And it's those sorts of practical things that I think that people don't really realize, because they're too focused on the emotional side of it, which is obviously important, but it's in the workplace, it's almost treating it like a sort of occupational health thing. If somebody had broken a leg, what would you need to do to support them? What extra things would they need from you whilst they recovered? I think grief needs to be treated exactly the same.
Some of the physical effects are quite surprising, aren't they? I have a friend at the moment who's recently been bereaved, and she is permanently cold.
Absolutely. Permanently cold or permanently hot, or ricocheting between the two. But yeah, definitely. I talk a lot about the sensory aspects. I found that my just generally I felt things physically much more. So I needed much softer jumpers, and I needed to be warmer, and I just needed that. I needed to feel more physically comfortable than I probably would have done before.
And I suppose that relates too to the workplace, doesn't it? I mean, you might find the temperature too cold when your colleagues are all okay, or you might not be feeling, as you say, comfortable in your clothes if you have to wear a uniform, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And all those things that might have been there before, might have not been there before, but suddenly are there now, don't really get thought of as part of grief. They don't get accommodated maybe in the same way.
I've talked to other people about the comfort thing, and you're so right about soft jumpers. And I went out and bought a pair of soft furry slippers, first time in my life. And it's the same thing, isn't it? It's part of the same syndrome. It's wanting to look after yourself, I think.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I quite often, when people I know have been bereaved, well, I don't mean like flowers or, you know, plants or things. So quite often I will send them a pair of really nice socks, just because I do think you can't have cold feet when you're grieving. You need warm feet.
And that sets up a whole load of questions, doesn't it, about where does cold feet, where does that expression come from? Is that to do with grief, I wonder, in the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same with, you know, it's the same with sayings like you're on your knees. Actually, you know, your joints hurt, your joints are sore, everything is a bit stiffer than it was before, because your body is just reacting to this thing that your brain is trying to process. And it all manifests itself in some way, shape or form that I think we don't really give the body credit for what it does in those circumstances.
So I can see how helpful this would be for other people, for colleagues to learn about. And I presume you do this just in case somebody suffers a bereavement, do you? Not when one has happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally it's a preemptive thing in just making us all a little bit more emotionally aware. If somebody has suffered a bereavement, it's kind of a little bit too late, in that it's going to be after, you know, that immediate what to do when someone dies or what to do when someone returns to work. That moment has passed. So ideally, people would just have this in their knowledge. But actually, lots of people who attend the sessions say afterwards, oh, I lost my friend or I lost my parents, you know, 5 years ago, and I didn't really realize that that's what all that was. I didn't link the two together. So people bring a lot of grief with them to the sessions, even if they don't realize that that's what they're going to do. Because I think we all have that to some extent in our lives.
So really what you're doing is kind of what I'm doing, which is just trying to raise general awareness of what can happen and how important it is to acknowledge it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think grief is such a natural process, and it is such a normal thing to happen to us in our lives. And hopefully we won't experience a sort of devastating grief, but even if we don't, everybody will, you know, it's that if you love, you grieve. Everybody will lose someone or something at some point and are going to have people around them who understand and support them. And I don't just talk about grief in terms of death either. You know, divorce can be as devastating as a death. Infertility, chronic illness, there's a lot of pain that people carry around with them, and they're not able to leave that at the door when they come to work, and so they have to have workplaces that can support them in that if we're going to have teams that are human. I think I
love the phrase you've got on your website: grief doesn't stay at home.
No, absolutely not.
So do you find most companies are receptive in a genuine way to this, or it's not just a tick box exercise? They really do want to help their colleagues.
Yeah, I think they really do. A lot of the companies that I work with have had some experience of grief, either the individual arranging the session or there's been something in the organisation that has caused them to think about it. A lot of people, when I'm talking to them initially, a lot of people will say, you know, I wish we'd have had this 5 years ago when, like, my dad died or something like that. So I get referred to companies by employees who say, I wish everyone had been different when I went through this in the past. And so I think companies genuinely, I think, care about their teams. And I think with grief, everybody wants to do it well. Everybody wants to be kind. There are very few people who genuinely don't care. They just want to be able to be comfortable and to know what to do. I think we've moved on from, hopefully, I suppose there are probably still companies who don't really mind if people leave and just will replace them. But on the whole, the companies that I work with are companies that care about their staff and they want to retain them. They don't want so many people after a bereavement end up leaving or going off on long-term sick because they can't cope with the sort of full-on nature of their work. But with a bit of understanding from the people around them and a bit more support built in, that situation could have been different. And most companies want to achieve that.
That's good to hear. Now, Louise, I'm very conscious that you mentioned your son right at the beginning and that he died and this inspired you. And then I'm afraid I kind of glossed over that. And I'd love to give you the opportunity to talk about your son, because that's something I have found, is that most people want to talk about the person they've lost.
I always love to talk about Fred. I mean, Fred was a very energetic, robust boy, I think you would say. He was always on the go, very active, he was very bright and innovative, in that he was always sort of deconstructing things, building things, looking for ways to change things. So he was diagnosed with leukemia when he was 13, which very much came out of the blue. I mean, everybody will say sort of, oh, I thought my child would be the last person to become seriously ill, but genuinely he was like a sort of, you know, bionic boy. He was never ill, he was never cold, he was certainly never tired. He was pretty invincible, but then was diagnosed with leukemia, and he had a the aggressive form, and he died 10 months later. He remained incredibly energetic, robust throughout his treatment. He was determined to ride his bike, go go-karting, all of the things that his doctors really, really didn't want him to be doing. And so he died just after his 14th birthday. And it is obviously, it is incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult for our family. And he was a massive part of our family, obviously, but he remains a part of his family. We talk about him all the time. He easily gets mentioned once a day in some shape or form. So he is still very much, you know, we are still very much a family of four, even though he isn't here anymore. And I think that being able to talk about him with joy and with love rather than sadness, I think is really important. And again, I think it's something that has taken time, but also it's something that other people can be very frightened of, that if they bring him up, that you're going to be upset.
Yeah.
We're like, well, actually, no, I'm upset that he died. I'm not upset that you've mentioned him. That's not a thing. So yeah, I think most people who've lost someone want to talk about them and want to hear about them as well. I love it when people send me photos that they found or say, oh, I was thinking about when this happened today.
That must give you good memories, whereas presumably the 10 months leading up to his death must have been horrendous for you and must still give you bad memories, I would imagine.
No, absolutely. And I think I'm always, I think particularly because Fred died during COVID as well, that added an extra layer of sort of complication and trauma that we're all still dealing with. And I think trauma is interesting because it manifests itself very differently to grief, I think, in that it's a very physical thing and it's very sort of uncontrollable and surprising when it crops up and when it doesn't. So it's that I suppose I am very careful with myself. I think I've learned over the last 5 years what I need and when I need it. And so I think I've got a lot better at looking after myself in that and protecting myself in that way and learning to deal with things when I need to. And from a work perspective, that is okay because, again, I work by myself. And so I'm responsible for my own workloads by and large. So I know that even 5 years later, there will be times of the year. In fact, that, you know, the last month or the last 6 weeks, I need to plan that time quite carefully to make sure that I've got plenty of rest, to make sure I've got enough going on that I am occupied, but not so much that I am overwhelmed. And that's still something that needs managing. And for people in the workplace, I think having a team that understands that even 5-10 years later, there will be times that are difficult and need a bit of planning.
You've said that so well, and it's something I so agree with. Very hard though to explain to other people, because somehow you feel, yes, you're taking care of yourself, but it sounds almost a bit self-indulgent, doesn't it? If you try to explain to people, I can't do too much, but I can't do too little. It's got to be a balance that suits me. It sounds very selfish, but it's so important, I've found.
Yeah, and I think it is, I suppose it is selfish, but actually I think it's self-preservation.
Yeah.
And everybody does what they need to do to keep things on an even keel. And I think none of us really know what that is like for another person. Mm. So the same with anybody struggling with their mental health or struggling with a physical illness or disability. You know, none of us know what it takes other people to get through the day. And I think if we can be honest with ourselves about what we need to do that, and actually we're happy to share that with other people, that sometimes that's more difficult than others, then I think we will all be a bit more understanding of each other in that way.
I think that's excellent advice and a very good point to end on. Thank you, Louise. There's some lovely nuggets of help in that conversation. Thank you so much for sharing it with me and with everybody else. So I'm just going to mention your name again. It's Louise Dillon of Armadillo Life. And you have a website called Armadillo Life.
Yes, armadillolife.co.uk. And you can mainly find me on LinkedIn.
Thank you so much, Louise, for talking to me.
Thank you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.